from first being laughed at and what's this mushroom coffee, then existed. Now a lot of people are on board, not just with mushroom coffee, but mushrooms in general.
I'm your host, Dave Knox, and this is Predicting the Turn, a show that helps business leaders meet their industry's inevitable disruption head on.
Welcome to another episode of Predicting the Turn. Today, we sit down with the founder and CEO of Four Sigmatic, Taro Isocopola. Taro, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me on, Dave.
Hey, well, I'm looking forward to learning more about the business and the journey that you've been on. Why don't we start off with really learning what is the business of Four Sigmatic and what was that original aspiration for you?
Yeah. Four Sigmatic is a health and wellness company specialized in functional mushrooms. These are the mushrooms that are legal, but give you physical benefits anywhere from energy to mental focus to less stress, immunity, yada, yada, yada. And I'm originally from Finland, and the business was started overseas 13 years ago. And then a little over 10 years ago, I brought it to the U.S. We're headquartered in L.A. And we've sold a few hundred million dollars worth of mushrooms so far.
So you mentioned business started in Europe and then you brought it to the U.S. In those early days of building the business and kind of having this original inspiration, what were the challenges that you had to overcome with introducing this concept of functional mushrooms?
Oh, yeah, there was plenty of issues. But if we go back a little over 10 years, there was no mushroom category, really. There was some capsule mushroom supplements sold for immunity, but by and large, there was none. We created the original mushroom coffee, and fast forward 10 years, it's now a multi-billion dollar global category. But just awareness around mushrooms was the main thing. Within the US specifically, there was a lot of mycophobia, just fear of fungi. There's a lot of historic reasons for that. So a lot of people were afraid of mushrooms. There was no category. Us explaining it to retailers, they didn't understand where this product would be in the store. A lot of education across the board was probably one of the main challenges.
In those early days, you were building your brand at one point, but you're also having to build that entire category and educate. It wasn't like there was just a shelf space that was made right for what you were introducing. How did you balance that sell the category versus sell the brand?
Yeah. Great questions. When you create a new category, there's pros and cons. But one of the cons is for sure that you have to find a way to get it in people to still how to think about it. We originally started selling mushroom tea because that was the kind of indigenous way of using these mushrooms in this like boiled tea. But in the US, there was no good tea ritual and Americans didn't know what's a high quality tea or low quality tea. So for us, one of the real entry points was positioning as a coffee replacement or a coffee upgrade and starting with the narrative of, hey, do you drink coffee? Do you get jitters? Do you get heartburn? Things like that. Are you interested in a better way to drink coffee? And that was the entry point for us. I think positioning it to something people still understand is very important if you launch a new category as a replacement or upgrade to an existing habit or ritual is vital. Otherwise, people really struggle understanding what it is and why to use it.
With that decision to start with the toehold in coffee and really build around that and use that as an education point, you then were faced with a lot of competitors that came about that were talking the mushroom category in that same way. How did you continue to differentiate yourself despite maybe some great competitors coming and maybe some that were not exactly following the rules of the game in terms of claims and other things?
Yeah. Just for as a context, like I said, it was like we were the original mushroom coffee. Now it's a few billion dollar category. And according to a study published a couple of years ago in Nature, it was that 74% of these reishi mushroom supplements, reishi is one of the more common mushrooms that we also sell, didn't contain any reishi mushrooms. So 74% of the products on the market didn't contain the product they said they were selling. So there was a lot of quality around it. So when you start a category, first, somebody has to do the education. Once the market matures and grows, a lot of people will try to undercut the price and quality. So just, I think, focusing on the sourcing and quality was a critical differentiator. The other one was flavor, because it is a coffee company, or we sell coffee and tea and products like that. flavor is very critical to the mass audience. So besides product quality and education, we also focus a lot on flavor. And for those reasons, I think we're now one of the few brands sold in retail channel where most of the other mushroom coffee brands are online only or mostly online companies.
Starting in your roots being in the broader category of mushrooms, but then going after the toehold around coffee, when did you make the decision to broaden beyond just the coffee focus? And how did you educate consumers that you were about a broader ingredient, not just a singular use case?
Yeah, very early on, which is probably like hindsight a mistake. We should have had higher conviction of the coffee and tea play. Like the revenues were small and we didn't know where to go. So we threw a lot of stuff on the wall and see what sticks. But yeah, we differentiated very early on versus, I would say, the best practice, particularly in consumer products, is just to stay in one category or max two. If they're adjacent, like coffee and tea are somewhat adjacent categories, but we were very broad, very early, and that made it hard for ops and finance and sales to grow into that.
Looking back on that, you had a lot of different places you were playing. What adjacencies have really emerged, though, as the second one behind coffee that's really working for the brand?
Yeah, for us, coffee, tea, and cocoa do really well together just because it's like in the head of the consumer, like a similar kind of a use case, if you may. And they often share buyers in the retail channel and the sets are next to each other. Although those are smaller categories in many cases versus we also sell protein and supplements. And those are much bigger categories, but they're merchandised very differently and how you sell them is very different. I think coffee, tea, cocoa have had more synergies, even though protein and capsules are probably bigger categories.
So with that in mind, how have you seen the consumer attitude and probably more importantly, the market evolve around mushrooms since you started for Sigmatic?
Massively. So from first being laughed at and what's this mushroom coffee, then existed. Now a lot of people are on board, not just with mushroom coffee, but mushrooms in general for environmental factors. There's a big movement around micro remediation of using mushrooms for degrading plastics. There's also a lot more use case of mushrooms for psychedelic purposes in certain pockets and famous universities doing research on it. We are not playing in that space, but it opened up the dialogue a lot where certain mushroom related documentaries do well on Netflix and whatnot. So I think culturally there's been a massive shift and that shows up also in the revenues of the category.
Talent is a big part of predicting the turn. And as we talk about talent, I wanted to mention one of our sponsors, Hunt Club. Imagine the power of the best marketers in the world helping you to find your next marketing leader. That's the power of Hunt Club. Hunt Club is a new category of talent company that powers the network of experts, connectors, and business leaders to help you find the best talent. Let's face it, recruiting hasn't changed with the times. Hunt Club is changing the recruiting game by leveraging technology and crowdsourced referrals to find you the best people possible for your company. Stop paying job boards that don't work or recruiting firms that recycle the same active candidates. Partner with Hunt Club.
So with that shift that's already taken place, what do you think the future of food and medicine is going to be with the role of mushrooms in it going forward?
Massive, massive. So fungi, that biological kingdom where mushrooms fall as well, is one of the main kingdoms in biology along with bacteria and plants and animals. So just to give you some context, already like almost half of all pharmaceuticals utilize fungi. So in the pharmaceutical side, it's already massive. In the biotech side, it's massive. Fungi are in our gut, in our skin, everywhere. Just usually where you find bacteria, you find fungi and vice versa. So I think we'll unlock a lot of food and medicine applications of fungi going forward. But it's already, because of the pharmaceutical connection, a massive space. People just not aware of things like penicillin is actually like a fungal medicine.
So with that in mind, how are you thinking about what's next for you and for Sigmatic?
Yeah, learning from past mistakes and fine-tuning is, at the end of the day, I'm a 13-generation family farmer from Finland. My dad taught me when I was a kid that a quarter in nature is 25 years, not 3 months like they teach Wall Street. So I'm trying to build a brand that will survive over 100 years for my grandkids to enjoy. But in order to do that in consumer packaged goods, which is the space we play in, it's a lot about focus and going an inch wide and a mile deep and just really getting good at that. It's less about the new shiny toy. Not everything that shines is gold. And we found gold. I think we're just going to focus on that.
So digging in on that, you know, the background, as you said, you come from a generation or a family of farmers, and farmers are the original entrepreneurs. They're the backbone of so many societies and communities. How did that family background, from an entrepreneurship standpoint, help you now as you went into a fast growth CPG entrepreneurship world?
Yeah, great question. Like anything, there's pros and cons. No matter how thin you slice it, there's two sides to everything. If you are an immigrant or a farmer like I am, you're probably used to hard work, adversity, grinding, but also having a profitability mindset. Margins in agriculture are very slim, so you got to be bottom line focused. So I think those help you, especially in the current day's economy as an entrepreneur, is working hard, withstanding adversity, managing the bottom line. At the same time, like moving here as an immigrant and being a farmer, maybe I was less sophisticated on terms. I had to self-teach myself a lot of the business side. I didn't have a network to rely on, capital to rely on, and probably also didn't have the growth mindset that some other people that had that background had. And I was maybe playing small, but smaller than some other entrepreneurs who were swinging for the fences.
Given that you didn't come from, you know, that background and that network, as you mentioned, where did you go for that inspiration and for the learning and the resources that you needed in those early days then?
Well, a lot of the inspiration came from nature and my background growing up in a farm. And I think that was authentic entry point of just love for mushrooms, love for nature, and a lot of domain expertise that many other people didn't have because of it. But as far as the business side, as the business was 4 years old, I got an MBA, which I thought would help me understand. I was probably wrong on that. I don't know if I learned that much. Just trying to be immersed in that world of food and beverage and business in the US and trying to attend conferences to just absorb stuff. And at the end of the day, I think I got very little out of those channels. But then I met awesome people through them, and that like little capital M mentoring and learning from them was massive, and just learning from other people's mistakes and their lessons.
One of my favorite concepts in the world of business is the concept of motion and how putting yourself in different places can bring different learnings and aspects to your life. You've lived in 10 different countries in the US. You originally, then you moved to Austin. How have all of those different environments really contributed to your growth as an entrepreneur and playing in this new category?
Yeah, it's actually crazy depending on how woo-woo or left brain you want to be. But I've thought a lot about the biggest life-changing relationships or moments in my life that were like game changers. And I looked at like, how did those end up transpiring? And there's so much serendipity and unpredictable on how they emerged. And yeah, I'm a huge believer in that too. But if you don't chase those moments in an authentic way, they probably don't emerge either. So just living in different countries, learning from different cultures back in different ways that I didn't expect. I meet some person and then I can speak their language, or I've been to their hometown or something, and that builds an immediate connection between us that has helped. Again, it's very random. There's a lot of serendipity in it that you can't plan. And that's not the reason why I did it, but it's funny how it sometimes emerges when you put yourself out there.
Yeah. So when you put yourself out there and you're in those different environments, what kind of guidance do you give to the next generation of entrepreneurs that want to follow in your footsteps? They can't replicate your exact background. So how do you coach them of how they can put themselves in that same place for serendipity?
Yeah, it's interesting. I have 3 kids right now, and I've been thinking of what are the messages I want to pass on to them. And one of the messages I really hope is like not to become an adult too soon. I feel like there's a lot of pressure through Instagram, TikTok, whatnot, of becoming famous or rich really early on and like skipping certain phases of self-discovery. And I feel like that's an issue for a lot of reasons, including then you probably didn't find your passion, but you just took someone else's dreams and ideas. You're not living your life in your way. So a lot of things that I want to pass to my own children is curiosity, and hard work to try new stuff, but not feeling pressure to accomplish something externally, at least until mid to late 30s, maybe, if even then.
So thinking about that philosophy then within your own company and culture, what's been the approach of how you built Four Sigmatic in terms of, is everybody at the same office? Are you remote? What's the culture like?
Yeah, the company was started fully distributed, so remote, just because the founding team was in different countries. That was 10 plus years ago, and I was advocating for remote work being the solution to a lot of things. Like many entrepreneurs, I zig when others zag, and we built a lot of systems on how to grow a business quickly remotely. When COVID happened, I almost went the other way. I signed a lease in LA, try to get everybody in the office, which was hard, but I'm huge advocate of the hybrid model. I see value in both sides, and I think extremes often end up failing for different reasons. So I'm a huge advocate for work-life balance and just general success of the organization as the individual and the hybrid model. But yeah, that's our kind of path. It is a little bit category dependent and company maturity dependent too. So it's not necessarily the same for a new startup. It is for a mature company.
With that work-life balance, it's one that sounds amazing in principle and everybody wants it, but it's often very difficult when you're dealing with a high-growth company, demands of retailers and customers, and everything else that a business throws at you. So how do you stay true to that, to balance the needs of the business with the needs of your people and find that healthy balance between the two?
Yeah, I think a lot of it comes to planning and systems and processes that allow you to be flexible in the moment when surprises and even positive surprises happen. So I think what I think every company and organization can benefit from is really obsessing over KPIs and role clarity, and then keeping those or the values as the North Star, and being flexible in the approach, but rigid in what really matters for that role or that group. So I think a lot more time can be spent there. Are you in person or remote? I think in remote that gets exposed more because of the factor. And then rules like customer comes first or whatever it might be for your organization is important to understand that not everything is a priority. And if you spend your day in meetings internally, probably less work gets done. And you have to block time for customers or focus work where you're not taking meetings consistently.
Earlier on, you mentioned that you want this to be a business that your grandchildren know about. With that in mind, how do you think about the next five years of Four Sigmatic?
Yeah, it's very exciting for a lot of reasons. I think a lot of CPG brands have gone out of business or are about to go out of business. There was, particularly in the health and wellness side, a huge surge anywhere from, let's call it 2015 to 22. And I think a lot of those are dropping out, but I feel like that's also the time when the best companies are formed or scaled. So I think that's very exciting. I don't think the fundamental consumer need for better food has gone down. If anything, it's gone higher. And I think people's willingness to pay for nutrient-dense foods and supplements has increased. So I feel fairly bullish, but there's plenty of headwinds for the whole industry, including for Sigmatic, just from a macro perspective over the next 3 to 5 years. But that's just going to make, I think, the companies better and stronger who can survive it.
Well, I think that is the perfect place to end the conversation on. So I appreciate you sharing the journey of this amazing business that you built over the last decade plus.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. Thanks for letting me share some of my lessons with your community.
Thanks so much for listening. If you like the show, hit that rating and make sure to subscribe so you don't miss a single episode. And for more resources, head over to predictingtheturn.com.